than concrete. That is, that I cannot tell you exactly when the rapture will occur. And that's, the Bible has been very specific about that. You didn't have to go to a seminary to learn about it. It's there, just indicates that. But even knowing, not knowing when it will occur, when this does start, it is going to be like Hades on wheels. It's going to start suddenly and abruptly. And while I can't tell you the day, the week, the month, or the year, I can tell you that it will begin on the seventh trumpet rapture. And I can't tell you when that will occur. So are you any better off? Well, I certainly am, because it was something that I wanted to know what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to do it. And God chose a way for me to learn it as I went along. And at the same time, humiliate me in my own mind, in my own thinking, so that I wouldn't get the big head. I realize that now. And Imogene was a lot more spiritual than I was. And we walked together and served the Lord. But she had a spirituality that was based on simple things that were, she just knew them. And I never was jealous of her for it, but she was always criticizing herself. She wished she could be more like me, and that wasn't the case. God didn't put us together because I was spiritually mature and she needed to learn. I wasn't that spiritually mature, and she was. She had a quiet, gentle simplicity about her that is what all this is really about. When the Lord said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me," what he said after that was, to me, staggering. He said, "For I am meek and lowly." How can someone who created the universe, how can someone who, Lord, I've studied so much about the creation of the universe and different things in it. How does someone keep up with all this? You have to be God to do it. And so God put Imogene with me to show me that it's not something complicated. You just have to believe what God said. But I had a special unction from the Holy Spirit. I was supposed to teach and preach. And so I began to do that. And it's been the joy of my life. What have we learned from volcanic ash crisis? What have we learned from it? This is an article that was in a Chinese newspaper a long time ago. And I told Michael one time, and I've told you this many times, they asked Michael to teach a Sunday school class. And I had a hard time getting Mike just to pay attention when he was here. And Michael understood one thing. This. Wham! And so whenever I wanted him to make good grades, which was all the time, and he didn't do it, this is what he got. Wham! Well, I told him one thing about words, like you see here, E-Y-J-A-F-J-A-L-L-A, J-O-K-U-L-L. You say, "Well, Brother McMurray, would you pronounce that for us?" No, I might not be able to do it twice in a row. I told him, he said, "What do I do, Dad?" I said, "I'm going to send you these books." I said, "Tell me what you know about this." And he began to tell me, and it was pitiful, but he had it right. But I said, whenever you start teaching Sunday school class, I said, and you come to a word and you have no idea how to pronounce it, just remember that every time you pronounced it in that lesson, I said, don't say it another way in another place. And he said, what do I do? I said, you have to do what I did when I started. You have to just practice it. And you say, well, Brother Mike Murray, I sure wish you'd understood all this from the start. You don't know how much I wish I could have. I didn't know what the problem was. The problem was me. I was called to preach the gospel. God intended to use me for that. And so I wanted to know how to pronounce these words, really honestly, not to impress people, but so people would believe what I was saying. We had a lot of preachers in our work that knew an awful lot about Greek words, Hebrew words, and Chaldean words. And when I was raised in a church that taught what I believe now, and I still believe what they taught me, I was very impressed with the fact they pronounced these words. And I thought, well, that had something to do with me understanding it and believing it. And I came to understand that I was God called and that I needed to learn how to pronounce them so the people would realize he knows what he's talking about. And so I began to try and learn the languages. And then when I went to the seminary, I put a lot of time in them. I don't do that anymore. So look at the name of that volcano. Iceland is a volcano. It was a volcano that came up out of the ocean seafloor, and it just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And so I kept learning and learning and learning and learning. God never bothered me about being called. I tried to get around it. I wanted to do what God wanted because I feared God. And when he finally saved me, he had led me along a path where I could understand these things better than I did when I started. And I think God wanted me to understand these things in a way that I could help other people to understand. It's not how much you know about Greek, Hebrew, and Chaldean words. It's how much you can transmit to people and not corrupt what God had to say. And that's what I did. Now, this volcano, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. I could, but I might not pronounce it the same way again because there's an awful lot of things in there. You say, well, do you mean God meant for you to do that? Absolutely. And I'm going to have to stand before the judgment seat of Christ and say that because I know he did. Now, this volcano, way back yonder, erupted last Wednesday. This is an old article, spewing steam and billows of ash into the sky. The volcanic eruption is not, by any means, a large-scale one and has not caused this one casualties up to now. However, the eruption has pulled Europe out of track. Now, these volcanoes that come on Iceland, they're not huge volcanoes. And it's important to understand that because people said, don't worry, this is just a small volcano. And I looked at that and people asked me questions about it and I told them that whenever it went across Europe, the wind was blowing from a certain direction at different attitudes and from different directions. I was trained in institutions of higher learning how to do constant absolute vorticity trajectories. You say, well, you didn't have to do that to understand. No, but it sure helped. You say, well, what did you get puffed up about it? Yeah, I thought I was pretty good at it. And that the small volcano that went off up there cost airlines some $200 million a day, and it affected millions of travelers worldwide. Since the eruption of a small-scale volcano like the Ujafilajo could trigger massive chaos, it is, of course, worthwhile to explore the lessons from the volcanic ash crisis. I'm doing what I was supposed to do now. And I tried not to get the big head over it, because I knew that God had given me a mind for this, and I just spent my time being concerned about, are you really God called? And yes, I was. I knew I was. But the first and foremost is an early warning and forecasting system is vital to tracking the fallout resulting from the volcanic eruption. It is commonly accepted that the volcanic eruptions are unpredictable, but it is possible to monitor and forecast the movement and scale of volcanic ash. God made all things. There was not anything made that he did not create. Now, he created. God wasn't created. God created all things. And it became apparent to me that it had to be true. And it suddenly helped me understand that God himself resurrected himself from the dead. It helped me to understand a lot of scriptures in the Bible with a concrete belief. And it wasn't based on science. It was based on true science. And to me, true science, if it matches what the Bible teaches and matches the words that God used in the languages, I studied three different languages, then you know it's true science if it matches. If it doesn't match, you just throw it out. And that's what I did. And finally, Chuck's dad came down here, and I've told you many times, he didn't know the words like I did, but he had the idea of what was right and what was wrong on it. And he didn't need to go a seminary, but God wanted me to go, because when I say something about this, I don't guess. I know God resurrected himself. I'm certain of it. And I'm certain that nothing was created without God. Now, when I'm talking about things like that, I'm talking about tangible things that you can see and taste and touch and feel. But who created God? That's a good question. Nobody. God has always been light. He never will be anything but light. And the scientists in Europe have performed their duty well in sending early warning of the volcanic ash, thus avoiding potential aviation disasters. Now, German news magazine Spiegel reported something that was absolutely true. The British meteorologist immediately put their supercomputer on the job. 15 meters later, they had their first forecast of how the dust cloud would probably spread. I went outside one day, and at that time I was in a place that was right on the coast. It was on the western coast of North Africa, and I stayed inside a fenced-in area. And while I was there, I took highball runs, and I was in charge of the enlisted men, and we would take these pieball runs, and I had never seen any of these things. Well, now I've seen them, and I understand them. You say, well, aren't you smart? No. God taught me, if you'll learn these words, I'll help you to understand how eternal I am. He didn't whisper that in my ear, but it became apparent to me. And I was in this place where I was fenced in. There was a conflict going on between France and the I don't want to tell you where it was, but the place was on the western coast of North Africa. And I had never seen a dust storm. And when I was growing up, for some reason, God got me to go to places that really helped me. There was a blowing, what they call the blowing cave, way out in the middle of nowhere. And they called it the blowing cave because when you went up there in a hot summertime, it just blew the coolest air out you'd ever imagine. And it helped me to understand it. I'd never been to school at that time, and I said, well, I wonder how God does that. I didn't say, well, you know, there's no God. I didn't say any of that. I didn't believe any of that. But I knew that God understood that, because he made the earth. I knew that I was taught that there was nothing made that God didn't make. Now, there I was on the coast, and all of a sudden, I walked outside. We were in this large fenced-in area. You weren't allowed to go anywhere without in any area unless it was a protected area, anywhere around there. And all of a sudden, I walked outside where we were, and I had never seen anything like that before in my life. There was a gigantic, huge cloud of dust, and it just came up out of nowhere. And it was to the east of me, and to the west of me, I was standing on the coast of northern Africa. And when I read that, I ran back in. I said, shut these shutters. And that we were working on maps and charts and everything else, and they ran back out. It scared them to death. It scared me to death. And all of a sudden, we started shutting all the outside shutters, and by the time we finished them, we couldn't see anything. It's a condition called Waksoff, and it means you can't see your hand in front of your face. And so, you know, I was scared. And all of a sudden, it just passed out over the ocean. It came in from the Sahara Desert, passed over across to us, and I was right on the seacoast. And between me and the seacoast was this wire that protected us from the enemy. And that thing went out there, and it just vanished. It just vanished. And a few minutes before, it had been walks off. You couldn't see anything. And so I said, okay. I know why I think God called me. He wanted me to be able to understand those things. It helped me a lot. It didn't help me to say, well, there's a God. I knew that. I'd been taught that. I'd never had any of these languages. But God began to impress upon me, that's why I called you. And he wanted me to explain so it would help the rest of the men who he was teaching that were God called. It would help their faith more. And it did help my faith more, because after that, I began to really, I took the highest pie ball ever recorded in the history of the world at that place. And I began to realize that nobody created God. God is light. He's always been light. He never has been darkness. And the gap theory was something that really made me stop and look at it. You say, well, how did it help you? I already knew he was God. I already knew that he wasn't created. When Lazarus came out of the tomb, when he resurrected from the dead, he had the wrappings on him. And he just floated out. You say, well, didn't you believe there was a God before that? Absolutely. You say, how'd that happen? God. He didn't speak in my ear and say, well, Tom, now I want to show you something. He just showed it to me. And I realized that everything God said, that it didn't match up with his word. It was not true science. There's true science and there's false science. And I said, well, how could I possibly have believed what I believed? Why doesn't this change my mind? I wouldn't ever have believed that. As much as I did before that, but I knew that it was true. So when I came back to this church, we had people in this church that would have left here. And I knew that. And I thought, I guess John Owen helped me an awful lot on this. He was in class one day and he said, when students leave this class, he said, they go out there and start competing for schools, for churches. And he said, they're always hoping a large church that pays them well will call them. He said, they're always hoping for that. Well, so did I. And I thought, well, I felt guilty about it. And I thought, well, why did I? He said, here's what you need. He told the whole class, he said, unless you are absolutely certain God's calling you to that, unless you're certain God's calling you to that church, he said, go out somewhere and find a place where they don't have a lot of missionary Baptist churches and go there and start a church. I knew all how to go out and I was supposed to start a church. I understood all that. And this particular thing that disappeared just went whoosh, and I'd never seen anything like that before in my life. I'd never seen a tornado in my life. And one day I was in seminary and I was studying, and I had to write up a paper on different things, and I was studying for a test we were going to have, and it was on a Saturday, I believe, and I didn't hear anything except thunder, and it wasn't real bad thunder, and I'm just sitting there, and so I don't pay much attention to it, and Imogene was in town, and it didn't bother me. So, Imogene came back from town, and she said, honey, where is that house that was down the road? I said, what house are you talking about? And she told me where it was. And I said, it's there, isn't it? She said, no. She said, the only thing that's left is the concrete foundation. She says, there's nothing else. And I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. And so then I drove down there. It was gone. And so it was less than a quarter of a mile from my house and headed toward town. So I drove back and drove back down in the woods behind us, what we call the South 40. And I went down there, and it had cleaned out a path like you wouldn't believe, right through the tree. Came right up by the house. And I'm sitting in there studying. And there it was. It had happened. And after that, I really started trying to understand things, because I began to see things that no matter whether it seemed to contradict the Word, I knew the Word was true. And I knew the only way that could be is if God was eternal and that God with Himself was the light. And that's when I wrote my first book. Well, I was still in seminary. And that's when I began to do what God called me to do. And here I am. Soon be 86 years old. Looked over at you to make sure I was getting that right. And I can see God, how He worked in my life. You say, I suppose you think I may be telling you this for some ulterior reason. No, that's not true. Because I've got more help from other preachers on what I believe from the same God who called me. And they've worked and served God in different places, in different ways. And I've done my job. So if I die tonight, that'd be just fine. I just accept it as God's will. Statistics showed that by late Sunday, more than 63,000 flights had been canceled in 23 European countries. Now, if you look up where Iceland is, it sits to the northwest of Israel, of England, and to the northwest of France. And in 23 European countries, stifling the lifeblood of the continent's economy. Because few planes are available for service, travelers can't contend their travel. Machinery can't get to factories. Food sellers don't transport their goods. And businesses find it increasingly difficult to maintain regular business activities. As an old Chinese saying goes, it's never too late to mend to repair the sheepfold. Well, I've done what I could. I've tried to do what God wanted. I've known what I was supposed to do. You have no idea how much I prayed for it in my early ministry and still do. And the things that I talk about, the Icelandic volcano ash crisis has helped expand people's knowledge about volcanic eruptions, and various debates and assessments are conducted, are to be conducted across the globe, Europe in particular. European Commission President José Manuel Barroso has decided to set up an ad hoc group to assess the impact of the volcanic ash cloud on air travel industry and the economy. The volcanic ash cloud has created an unprecedented situation. Caruso said in his statement, adding that it was important that all measures to be considered were coordinated at the European level. The transport ministers from all 27 European nations are planning a video conference to discuss countermeasures aiming at more negative impact on the European economy, which is still struggling. Now, I encourage you to go through this and chapter 12 is shown on the next page, Light at Night. And the last page is, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. Atheists don't really have the same problem we have. It's simplified for an atheist. He doesn't believe there's a God, so he's got an answer for everything. And it's a lot easier for somebody that's a Southern Baptist, a lot easier than it is for us, because he can tell people, you know, this, I believe, they believe in God. And they believe that that if you're saved, everything's just fine. They don't realize that, I hate to quote David Robinson, but I'm going to. They used to always ask David Robinson, well, does this count? They always wanted to know, is this going to be counted on the test? I mean, is this going to be on the test? And David will always give them the same answer. Everything counts. Well, you see, he's just a man. I know that. I realize that. But the thing I've come to learn about God is everything counts. Everything. Now, you say, well, when are you going to break that down for us? Well, I might be able to do a better job if I know when the rapture is going to occur, but I don't, and I never have. After I went through all this, I knew I was God called. And I was concerned about my baptism and everything else, but it's just a long story, and I'm not going to keep you here all night. But I want you to know that we're facing something that's a lot worse than people understand. We're going to see Hades break loose on the earth. We're going to see stuff going on, and it's all tied to the seventh trumpet rapture. It's all tied to that. And there are many phases in between the seventh trumpet, which also tells us that at the same time that there's about so many days left in the tribulation period when that occurs. Once Chuck's dad came down here, I realized, Tom, you knew before you ever went to school that before you ever studied the languages, you knew that God was eternal. You knew it. How'd you know that? I just knew. I can't explain it, but I knew. I wish you'd look at this. Think about it, because they created this rapture thing. And it was very simple for the devil to do. He just changed everywhere they had the first resurrection. He just changed it to a rapture. That way you can pretty well do what you want after that. You say, do you mean that God meant for us to study to show ourselves approved unto God, a workman that need not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Do you mean if you try to do what's right and worship God in spirit and in truth, do you mean that you believe that God doesn't like that at all? God wants you to understand something. That's very plain. You don't have to go to a school to learn anything. But God calls a lot of men to preach, and they know they're called. And God uses them in different ways. I've run into quite a few, but not a lot. You're still coming to this church. Why in heaven's name are you coming to this church? It's because this is where God wants you. We've had a lot of... Your dad was a really good deacon. He was. And the thing that was good about your father knew that there was a God. Your father never had to go to Africa and learn all that stuff. But God used him for something different. This church needed a good deacon. And it had someone that had been taught things that were true. And he wanted that person to learn to teach other people that were weak in the faith. Don't fool yourself if you ever get to thinking, well, I'm strong in the faith. You got a problem, because God's the only one who really understands how all this turns out. And if you look through here, this is something that happened to me in life. And God did it. Every good thing that's ever happened to me in my life, God did. They weren't all pleasant. God punished me for things. When I would do something and get ready to go overboard and do something, he just wouldn't let me. You say, well, you could have gone ahead and done it anyway. No, he scared the fire out of me every time I would get off track. And so you can read this as well as I can. But the thing I really want to get across is this. The rapture, as they now call it, has not occurred. But I'll guarantee you this. These last 3 years have given a preview of the coming of Christ during a period of time that really is tied down to the seventh trumpet. It occurs in phases. You have got to have a situation that fulfills all the scriptures. Do I teach something that I can't prove? No, I don't. But the truth is, what about David? Because of what David had done, and because the child was coming, David jumped up and said, and listened to the prophet say, Nathan. He said, who is the man? And the same David said, Peter said of him in his epistle, he said, when thou art converted, strengthen the brethren. If you don't think that seeing true signs didn't strengthen my faith, you're mistaken. I didn't waver because I knew I was still sinful, yet I knew I was God called. Finally, I realized it. Now, one little volcano. You study these volcanoes in Iceland. Iceland itself is a volcano. And you study all the rest of them, you can see God's hand working. So why have I done this here? You say, well, I didn't have to have that. I know you didn't. But aren't you thankful for it? I certainly am. I certainly am thankful for it. And every time something comes up in my life where I just want to give it up, I know who's doing it. It ain't God. It's the devil. And I'm watching my own brother go to hell because he's sending himself there. It is not God's will that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Robert, you want to dismiss us?